Michael Rikas, and welcome to my podcast on our nation's freshwater fisheries. This is the Our Inheritance podcast, where we focus on stories about conserving our planet's natural resources. We explore different accounts of wildlife, nature, restoration, and rehabilitation in our changing climate. My name is Michael, and in this episode, we'll explore the topic of freshwater fisheries conservation in the United States. Before we discuss the problems facing our freshwater fisheries in Minnesota, it is important to identify the types of bodies of water we'll be focusing on. Minnesota is well known for its natural glacial lakes, but despite their similar beginnings, these lakes are quite diverse. For example, shallow grass-filled lakes chock full of largemouth bass can be found throughout Minnesota. Conversely, crystal clear lakes filled with rock, wood, and huge smallmouth are just as available across the state. While Minnesota is well known for its many healthy and productive fisheries, there are still a number of challenges facing these fisheries and impacting the populations of one of our most treasured resources, our sport fish. Before we dive into these problems, however, we have just one more detour. It is important to first understand the connection between our treasured sport fish and our equally cherished lakes and rivers where these fish reside. To show the connection between our fish and our bodies of water, I will use the largemouth bass, smallmouth bass, and other species I am very familiar with. While largemouth are a very resilient species, like all fish, they require adequate habitat for them to sustain their numbers and grow trophy-sized fish. During different times of the year, bass can be found in all sorts of habitats, from rock piles in 30 feet of water to shallow sandy flats in 3 feet of water. The same goes for other species in the spring. Walleyes, for example, are typically found in shallow water spawning in the early spring, and as the water warms into the summer, they move deeper and deeper to offshore structure. For all of Minnesota's freshwater fish, the spawning season and habitat go hand in hand. To show this, let's talk about some popular sport fish in Minnesota and how they rely on habitat during this crucial time of year. Starting off with largemouth bass. During the back end of the spring, as water temps touch the mid to high 50s, largemouth make a move shallow, seeking out hard, clean bottom, often composed of gravel, sand, or large chunk rock. After finding adequate spawning grounds, these fish pair up and the male begins preparing a nest, fanning away any debris with his tail. Next, the eggs are laid by the female and fertilized by the male. Then, for potentially the next 2 weeks, the male guards the nest and the hatched babies, or fry as they are known, disperse. The spawning season for other warm freshwater fish like walleye is similarly connected to habitat. Walleye spawn much earlier in the year, basically as soon as ice out occurs. Just like bass, the walleye seek out hard, clean bottom in relatively shallow water. Without bottom composition like this, the walleye population will suffer, as walleye will either have nowhere to drop their eggs, or the yields each year will continue to decline. This is just one example of the connection between habitat and our sport fish. Another example is best reflected during the summer months. As the water temperature warms into the high 70s and 80s, a split of the bass population occurs. Roughly half the fish move out deep in search of oxygen-rich water and slightly cooler water temps. The other half of the population remains shallow, spending their time in submerged grasses, which provide them with forage, oxygen, and cover from the sun. Just like the plants we find on land, submerged grasses like milfoil, coontail, eelgrass, and hydrilla in the southern United States photosynthesize, pumping oxygen into the water, which attracts fish species from the top and bottom of the food chain. Ultimately, grasses like these play a huge role in not only the lives of bass and other fish, but also the ecosystem as a whole. Without grasses like these, many fish would not even be able to survive throughout the warm summer months. From these examples of spawning habitat and aquatic grasses, I hope you now have a better understanding of just how important habitat is for our fish. Not only does it allow for them to reproduce, but more importantly, it allows them to survive our ever-changing seasons. Now, let's dive into some of the problems facing our fisheries in Minnesota and beyond. While the spawning season is typically a happy time for all anglers, there are still a number of threats to this season and our fish. The first threat is sediment. In the early and mid-spring, when predators like smallmouth and largemouth bass spawn, much of the country sees pretty heavy rain events, or in our case, rapid snow melts. These events have only been exacerbated by climate change and continue to get worse each year. Events like these not only fill up our lakes and rivers, but they also carry with them sediment. Sediment can greatly threaten not only spawning fish, but entire aquatic ecosystems. To get more information on this threat, I spoke with Shan O'Gorman, a fisheries biologist originally from Georgia who has been managing small ponds and lakes in the Southeast for 20 plus years.
A bucket, a 5-gallon bucket full of sand, and then kicked it over, right? That it would make a plume out of the bucket, right? That's what it looks like in the shallow areas of the lake where your streams come in that are bringing your sediment. So you get two problems with the scour of sediment. One problem is, like I said, it scours. It's covered the rocks. It's destroyed the crawfish habitat. Fish can't bed on it because it's too soft and shifts around, right? So they've lost those areas that were heavy sediment load. They've lost the ability to spawn there. If they try to spawn in it, it shifts around, rolls over their eggs, and got no successful spawn in areas like that. But there's a secondary problem that they never touch on. And it's that fine particulate matter that creates turbidity. Okay, so in heavy sediment lakes, they'll be kind of a muddy. They'll be darker. They'll be stained with all that dirt particle gets fluffed up every time it rains. Well, that shades the water, and that reduces the amount of plankton in the water. Okay? The plankton drives the system. That's the base of the food chain. So sediment loads with muddy water all the time is reducing reducing the carrying capacity of the lake, right? Of all the fish. So in Georgia, you might have, on average, we have 100 pounds of fish per acre. But in a pond that's constantly muddy, you're going to have like 75. Okay? Just because sediment load has reduced the plankton bloom. So by going in there, dredging that out, getting all that stuff out of there and allowing the water to clear and allowing the water to, it can then support a higher density of plankton, which directly corresponds to a higher population of fish.
As our guest explained, the dumping of sediment into our bodies of water can not only hurt the spawning season, but it can also shut down the entire ecosystem from the bottom up, starting with the crucial phytoplankton, as mentioned. You might think that the loss of microscopic organisms like phytoplankton isn't a big deal, but these are algae actually function as the building block of many freshwater ecosystems. As Mr. Gorman explained, phytoplankton are an essential part of the diet of many fish fry, particularly largemouth and smallmouth bass fry. Without them, it would be nearly impossible for these fry to grow, which would result in tiny yields each year, as many of these fry would be unable to survive their first winter and begin spawning in the following years. Furthermore, sediment prevents phytoplankton from producing oxygen. Just like aquatic vegetation, phytoplankton needs sunlight to photosynthesize and produce oxygen. But with sediment muddying up the water, much less light is able to reach the phytoplankton, preventing the production of oxygen. Another threat to our lakes in Minnesota and across the country is climate change. More specifically, the longer summers and shorter winters we are all experiencing. While it may not feel like it this year, summers are becoming longer and hotter, leaving lakes open and warming for a much bigger chunk of the year. This can have many effects on crucial parts of habitat for our freshwater fish, which Brian Nurbone of the Minnesota DNR addressed when he spoke with us.
Depends. Yeah, it depends. So I'll talk a little bit about how we're seeing some changes. One thing we're seeing for sure in Minnesota is we're seeing less ice cover during the year. So there's just a shorter period of time the lakes are covered with ice, and the longer period of time they're open. So the longer they have that open water condition, the more warming can happen, and the lakes do what's called stratification. So you end up with sort of a warmer layer of water on the surface, colder water down below. And once that sort of stratification sets up, the density of the water doesn't allow them to mix. So for lakes that are deeper or not really big, wide open lakes, they get stratified at a certain point in the summer. And then because there's no mixing, that bottom layer of the lake doesn't have any access to the oxygen of the atmosphere anymore. And so the oxygen in that deeper part of the lake then has to basically sustain itself through that whole summer until the fall, when the mixing happens, when the water gets to the same temperature and all the lake turns over, they call it, so that you can again get oxygenated water down to that deeper part of the lake. So that by extending that period of time that it has to stay stratified, you're increasing the demand on the oxygen within that deeper part of the lake. And so if you've got a lot of nutrients that are ending up in that deeper part of the lake, so algae that's dying and floating, sinking in the bottom, plant matter, same, that sort of thing, that's using up oxygen as it decays. And so you end up with this anoxic layer of water toward the bottom of the lake from all of that decaying material.
As Mr. Nerbone explained, these extended warm seasons can begin to dismantle ecosystems, starting with crucial aspects like forage and predatory species, but most importantly, available oxygen. The warmer temps we're beginning to see are essentially producing an adapt or die situation, in which some fish do better than others. Bass, for example, fare much better in warmer waters than walleye and muskie. Walleye and muskie are cool water species and oxygen-sensitive species, meaning that they fare best in 40 to 75 degrees Fahrenheit, and with warmer water temps and less oxygen available, these fish begin to struggle. In the coming years, we could see these Minnesota staple fish begin to dwindle if the problem of climate change is not addressed, and we continue to allow our lakes to heat up more and more each summer. The last threat I will touch on that is seen in lakes and rivers throughout the country is the presence of aquatic invasive grasses. Species like milfoil, hydrilla, and pondweed, which likely arrived in the U.S. in the ballast of large ships, has made a home in tons of lakes and rivers across the country. And while many fish like bass and panfish have largely adapted to its presence, it is not without its negative side effects. For us in Minnesota, the arrival of aquatic grasses is both a blessing and a curse. While speaking to fisheries biologist Shan O'Gorman, we discussed aquatic grasses, and he had this to say.
You know, there's a big misconception there about aquatic vegetation and what kind of habitat that actually provides. It actually ends up working against the fish population more than it's beneficial, right? You can have too much cover. You can have too many places for fish to hide. And then that starts to skew, like, it depends on the vegetation, but it'll skew one way or the other, really. It can be a situation where the bass can't hunt the forage and they just simply starve. And then you have a problem because you don't have a top end predator to control the forage, and the forage base stunts out.
In the end, aquatic invasive grasses are a part of our fisheries, and many DNR departments currently do not have the resources to eradicate these species completely. So, going forward, we will have to manage these species ourselves to prevent as much damage as possible. A few ways you can help prevent the spread of aquatic invasive grasses are by completely cleaning your boat and trailer after each use, and not disposing of any aquarium aquatic plants in your natural lakes and rivers. Lastly, it may seem like many of Minnesota's fisheries are on the decline. That is actually not the case. The DNR is still quite receptive to suggestions and changes demanded by anglers, and a great example of this is the Quality Sunfish Initiative, which is a program that protects 250 individual lakes as of 2022. This initiative aims at reducing the harvest of sunfish, allowing for an overall healthy population. Specifically, the Act limits anglers to a harvest limit of 5 to 10 fish, depending on the lake. These measures will not only enhance the sunfish population, but in turn provide more forage for our favorite sport fish like walleye, bass, pike, and muskie. This is just one of many examples of how the DNR and Minnesota as a whole is coming together to protect our treasured fisheries for many more generations. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of the Our Inheritance podcast. I'd like to thank the Blake School Environmental Science Program and research support staff for helping source, cite, and fact check this podcast. I'd also like to thank Shan O'Gorman and Brian Nerbone for taking the time to talk to me about bass and conservation. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and leave a review, and check out the other podcasts in our series. Thank you.